I really thought that if Toronto got past Florida, they were going to the finals. I thought that was happening. And
let me put it on. I'm standing on business right now. Toronto wins game 7 against the Florida Panthers. They're in the cup final.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. Like, I'm sorry.
No, that's not guaranteed. That's not guaranteed.
It is guaranteed. Because I
How though?
Welcome back to another episode from Checking From Behind. I'm your host, Zach, as always joined by my co-host, Preston. And today, we have a couple of guests that you guys are probably familiar with. We have Jimmy and Zach. Thank you guys again for coming on the podcast to talk some free agency, because free agency opened up July 1st. There weren't really a ton of expectations going into it. Brock Besser, of course, he stayed in Vancouver. We're still waiting to hear on Nikolaj Ehlers. We're going to be going over some winners, some losers, biggest surprises, and unpacking the free agency frenzy. So again, we're going to start here with some big surprises from the initial stages of free agency. As I previously mentioned, Brock Besser, he stayed in Vancouver for 7 years by $7.25 million. I 100% sure that he was going to end up leaving Vancouver, whether it was to go to Minnesota or just somewhere else different. And here he is after all the speculation about the Canucks turning down a potential first round pick at the trade deadline. And then he's like, yeah, probably done in Vancouver. They still find a way to get a deal done anyways.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit less about Vancouver and more about the market, to be honest. I feel like he went out in free agency and people were like, hey, man, we'll give you like 6x7. And Vancouver was like, you know what, we'll offer you this deal. Because I'm pretty sure there were some rumors in the season that they offered him a 6x8 deal, if you guys remember that. So it's not surprising to me that they were able to retain him. I think that Besser's market value just wasn't as high as he initially would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this free agency, I think a lot of people were expecting – you know, maybe some teams to throw money at him. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, Jimmy, you kind of hit it on the head. Like, Brock Besser didn't really want to leave Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was one of those situations where you look at him and you say, yeah, like, okay, you go to free agency, maybe you go and get, let's just say 8, right? 8 over 7 years. But was he really going to leave? Like, was he really considering this if Vancouver was going to offer him a contract? Which they did, and he took it. Like, I'm looking at one of my graphics here right now, and I'm going to Anaheim because they're going to be big spenders. But he didn't even felt like he didn't hit the market. So, like, you look at a guy like Brock Besser, big score. That was probably one of the more highlight guys in this free agency, which tells you a lot about how kind of shallow it was. Not to say he's a bad player, but I mean, he comes back to Vancouver. You got to be happy for a Canucks fan for that, because it's been a little bit of a disaster for about a year now.
Yeah, for sure. I was a little bit – I wasn't super, super surprised, but I thought he'd get a little bit more money on the open market. I think it was maybe he went on, saw the offers he was getting. They weren't really blowing him away. He's like, why leave a place I am? I don't think he ever really wanted to leave. I mean, he even said that in his – after he signed the contract that he never really wanted to leave. And, yeah, it was just test the market. That's what the market's for. I mean, he could have got 8 if he was really looking for a term, if he would have signed before July 1st, but he ends up staying put anyway.
Are we looking at any big surprises that you guys have off the top of your head, or did everything kind of go as expected? A lot of these second, third line guys going for $5.5-6 million. Did anything catch you guys' eye at all?
That's my bad. I had this one cooking in my head because you're going to ask it. I was extremely surprised by LA. You go and lose a guy like Gavrikov to the New York Rangers, who gets an absolute steal of contract 7x7. And then you have, I think it was like, what, 16, 17 million. You go and throw it on a backup goalie, which you needed. Then Corey Perry with some bonuses. And then it was Joel Armia, and this is where it got bad. Then you go and get Brian Dubalin, 4 million over 3 years. And then Cody Ceci, 4 years, $4.5 million. I shouldn't even be surprised when it comes to Ken Holland. It seems like this guy is absolutely in love with a guy like Cody Ceci. And it clearly didn't learn from his first time when you go and look at Edmonton, where he had the contract. I believe they shipped him out right after Ken Holland got
capped on. Yeah.
And then he goes and signs him again. So I'm like, clearly no one liked what you did before, and you bring him to a new organization, it's going to happen again. To be fair, He's a right-hand shot. You need one. But we're not. This is not. No, this is not one of those lateral moves from Gavrikov. Anyway, sorry, Jimmy. I interrupted you.
No. You stole my thunder a bit. I was about to chew up LA too, but you hit it perfectly, man. I'll actually stick around in California. Mikhail Granlund was a bit of a surprise for me, not because the contract in itself is bad. It just doesn't really fit the team, I would say. They had all this cap space. They were obviously big swingers on Mitch Marner and really wanted to get him from what reports said. So to end up with a guy like Granlund, it's not like it's hurting the Ducks. You ship off Zegras, you fill that kind of with Granlund on your third line. It's just a weird spot for him to have chosen. I mean, what are you going to do with that team in the next 2-3 years? On that last year, you're probably not going to be the same sort of player. It's not like the worst contract, but it was like the most surprising to me to see him not go to another place that could have probably used him a lot more than Anaheim could have.
Yeah, you guys both took both of what I was going to say. I was really kind of surprised when Mikhail Granlund did sign with the Ducks. I was expecting him to kind of go with a contender or a team that had a better chance of at least making the playoffs, I would say. Yeah. I think the Ducks, honestly, have had a pretty decent offseason so far, and I think they should be a lot better next year. And Granlund definitely helps bolster that. Like you said, Jimmy, though, I don't really see them doing any damage the next few years. I think they're still a super young team. They're still developing. And, you know, he's going to help. And then, yeah, Cody Ceci, I don't know what dirt he has on Ken Holland to keep getting that, because he gave him a nice contract in Edmonton, too, another 4-year deal. They got a raise this time. You know, you could do a lot worse than him, but does it really help the Kings that much? No, not really.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, replace Gavrikov. Yeah. It's a good, like, third-pairing guy. Yeah. But, like, do you really want to pay 4.5 for a third-pairing defenseman? Like, I don't know.
Like, 7.5 wrapped up in a – what I hope, because I really like, and you know what, I might get unraveled a little here, but if Brandt Clarke gets stuck on that bottom pair again, I'll lose it.
Yeah, so, I'd lose my mind too.
If you have $7.5 million wrapped up in your bottom pair and they're fine and you're playing them like what, 14 minutes a game max, maybe, sure. Yeah. Like maybe they're actually gonna get more, but sure. But
I'm surprised they weren't involved a little bit more in Keandre Miller. You know, if they weren't willing to pay Gavrikov, maybe try to go a different direction. But, like, you're not replacing Gavrikov. So, like, CeCe's not Gavrikov. So what are we doing here? Like, you brought a team that was going in more of a young direction to now being, like, getting older again. I don't understand their direction. I'm a big Kings fan at this point, too. I've been rooting for their team. I like their young guys. But this, to me, made no sense.
It feels like I texted Preston this morning, where the Oilers ended up sending Ken Holland to LA to fucking destroy this team. Because a bunch of your signings don't make sense. And I know you had to ship off Jordan Spence because it was revealed that he ended up requesting a trade from the Kings. So, like you guys said, you go from like a youngish team with a little bit of 28, 29-year-old vets on some solid contracts, mind you, and even some of the better depth, at least in the Western Conference, too. Now you're forced to sign Cody Ceci 4x4.5 because you traded Jordan Spence, a right-handed defenseman, a young one at that, a 23-year-old, 2 days beforehand. So now you're fumbling the bag. It feels like nobody wants to go to LA. So now Ken Holland's like, let me turn over to Cody Ceci, give him $4.5 million because we have no other options. Nobody wants to come to LA. And now you're stuck with a Drew Doughty who's probably going to retire in a couple of seasons max. And now you have Brandt Clarke, who I'm a fan of, but LA seems to just bury him on the second and third pair and don't give him 20-plus minutes a night half the time because they just don't feel like it anymore. And we saw the time that he did get some playing time, a decent amount of it, that he was a star. He was a stud. And it feels like he's going to be the successor of Drew Doughty. But at this point, I don't even know anymore. It feels like LA at this point is fumbling the bag with every single player on their team at this point. I don't get it.
Well, I know LA was a team rumored to be in the mix for Bowen Byram from the Sabres. Clearly, I don't think they're going that direction now with the way they handle free agency. They just have too many guys on that blue line now to bring in a guy like that. So, yeah, I think Byram would have been a good ad for this team. You know, it fits that mold of, you know, having a younger team and then you have a potential defenseman for the next 10 years that can be a top pair guy. So I think that would have been a really good fit for them.
That's why I was hammering the Byram for Spence plus whatever else you have to add to even out the value trade. And everybody called me an idiot for it, saying that the Kings shouldn't do that trade, nor the Sabres would be dumb to do it. And I still believe that. But let's hop into a couple of teams that improved the most so far. Why don't you guys go first here?
I got one off the rip.
Yeah, go for it. I got a couple that I'm kind of shuffling around in my head, but go for it.
You know, and I don't know if this is more, well, it really isn't. No, they didn't really sign like a ton of people in free agency, but who's looked, like, show of hands if you're watching, who's looked at the St. Louis Blues lately? Anybody? No? You should be. You know what? Like, I look at the St. Louis Blues, and I saw it after their P.S. Suter signing. I said, they've done a really good job at mixing some young talent in with some older ones and really committing to this retool. Not many teams are able to do it this quickly. And, of course, like, this isn't me just saying, oh, they took Winnipeg to seven when Connor Hellebuck seems to not be able to play well in the playoffs. However, you look at their team, and I'm pulling it up here if I can even find St. Louis Blues. Like, you go and get Nick Bjugstad, which I loved as a pickup. Pia Suter, $4 million, it's fine. You have the space. And now you're looking at, like, such good wing depth. Like, Jake Neighbors right now is projected to be on their third line. Like, that's not bad at all. Kyrou, you still have Snuggerud, who's probably going to get top minutes now. You have Robert Thomas, Braden Schenn, Suter, and Bjugstad down the middle. Like, that's solid. And even the defense, other than Nick Letty, who just got from waivers. But, like, this team isn't bad. And I really do like what they've done. And I think it's one of those more underrated looks that it could be a team that could just cause a lot of havoc. Again, still some improvements that they can do. But I've kind of slowly fallen in love with this team, partly because they rechanged their whole uniform and their logo is beautiful now.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like everything that they've done. And even just, I haven't even mentioned like their good prospects yet. So I like what St. Louis has done, even though they haven't done a ton in free agency.
I'm going to steal your thunder real quick, actually. St. Louis was one of the teams I was thinking of, but there was another central team, Utah, man.
God damn.
I like Utah. I like Utah a lot, dude. I didn't really necessarily get them moving on from Marcelli. Obviously, he's going to be pretty good in Toronto, but I really like their draft pick this year. I really like some of the smaller additions that they made. They brought in some cup pedigree with Schmidt, Vanacek. They got Brandon Tanev for some depth. And I just think that overall, even if you include the J.J. Paterka trade, their roster just looks so good from an up-and-coming team. I expect guys like Gunther to take a step forward this year. I expect Cooley to take a step forward. And I think that Clayton Keller is going to have a very big breakout season to get himself to be named to that USA roster. I was talking to Michael Wolf. He's a big media person over in Utah, and he was kind of breaking down the team for me earlier today. And he was telling me about how, like, Clayton Keller's got a big chip on his shoulder and how this year he's going to show a lot of people the type of player that he is. And you guys might not think this, but he's only like 25, 26 years old, yeah, which is crazy because it feels like he's been playing forever based on how Arizona goes. But yeah, they would be the team that I would point out the most and say I'm surprised by how well they did through the offseason.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you. You stole my thunder there with Utah. I'm going to go with a team that they might not help them a lot this year, but I think for the future, I think they're going to be loaded. I think the Islanders have done an excellent job the last few weeks as well. I thought they had probably the best draft out of any team in the league, especially the three first round picks they had. I know you give up a guy like Noah Dobson, but if all you know, you have Matthew Schaefer coming in immediately, expecting to play this year. And then with those other two, for in Eklund and Aitchison, if those guys pan out, you have three long-term players that would be great. I really like the Jonathan Drouin signing. I think he was an underrated player going into this free agent class. Got a bit of his mojo back in Colorado. We'll see how he does now, knowing that he's away from Nathan MacKinnon again. But I expect him to kind of stay better. You know, but the Islanders are in an interesting situation right now where they can't really blow it up. They got really lucky getting the first overall pick in the draft lottery. They're still pretty older when it comes to their forward core. They're still working on getting younger there, but I think they're starting to take the right steps to retool quickly. Obviously, as long as you have a guy like Ilya Sorokin as your goaltender, you can't really commit to a full rebuild unless you ship him out. Same with Matt Barzal. But I think that sooner rather than later, the Islanders are going to be back to being a playoff contender in probably 2 or 3 years. And I think this offseason was a really good first step for that.
Yeah, don't underrate the trades they made on draft night too for Noah Dobson. I think getting Eklund and Schaefer is going to make them really good for the future. So they're definitely one of the more like wow teams of the offseason. But there were more draft to me than it was free agency.
I think Utah definitely, I think, had one of the better off seasons as well. But I'm just trying to tie it all in together because had a super, super strong free agent class just because this wasn't the deepest class ever for free agency. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
I do want to mention one team, the New York Rangers, who the fact that they got a first, a second, and they also ended up signing Gavrikov, and you also get a Scott Morrow, and all you lost was really just Keandre Miller. I thought Drury had a pretty solid first day of free agency, and then Keandre Miller goes out and signs a $7+ million contract with Carolina, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing for a team that has a ton of cap space like Carolina. And by the way, I want to get to them a little bit too with Logan Stankovic later on here in the episode. But overall, I adding of Vladislav Gavrikov and already replacing Keandre Miller, and Gavrikov being a better defensive guy than Miller. And Miller, it kind of felt like he was kind of fiddling out in New York from time to time. Offensively, could still make plays. He was a stud, but he had a little bit of defensive lapses from time to time, especially as his tenure in New York went. So to give Gavrikov $7 million to be a shutdown defenseman to play on your top pair with Adam Fox, I thought was brilliant. And like I mentioned, to get multiple draft picks in next year's draft, plus, you end up getting a 22, 23-year-old Scott Morrow, who is also on your back end as well. I like that, and all that needs to be done now, which doesn't have to be done in free agency or the offseason. It's just kind of retooling up front and forwards a little bit, with them getting a little bit older, with Panarin having one more year left at 34 years old. Is he going to walk in free agency? Will they possibly get an extension done? We'll see what happens here over the next few months. And overall, I don't mind what the Rangers have done so far here in free agency. I wouldn't necessarily call them a winner of free agency, but they are a team that has kind of opened my eyes a bit here.
I'm going to say, maybe unpopular opinion, I really don't like them getting rid of Keandre Miller. And I think that this guy's going to be a stud with Rod. I think that Rangers fans and their development team in general, I'm going to continue with my hate train. I think the Rangers are the worst developing team in the NHL, and I think they deserve all the hate for it because they continue to draft players, they continue to ship them out. And I think 2 years ago, everyone was talking about how Keandre Miller was going to be the next stud in New York, and then the minute the whole team implodes because they don't know how to develop their players, and they make terrible trades, and they have weird off-ice stuff going with their best players, they're all of a sudden going to be like, Keandre Miller's the one to blame. Now, I think that Keandre Miller is going to go to Carolina. He's going to be fantastic there, and he's going to have that contract look like it's the best one in the NHL in a couple of years.
Yeah, I've been preaching for months and months that Keandre Miller needed to get out of New York. I think it was the best thing for him. I completely agree with you, Jimmy. I think they're awful at player development, just horrible. Like, and you look, they trade a guy like Kaapo Kakko, and then goes to Seattle, and then immediately starts playing better. I think Philip Chytil is going to be good in Seattle as well. No, not Seattle. Vancouver. Sorry, got it mixed up. Okay. And like Lafreniere, I hope he can. I think he's taking a step back. I think, yeah, the Rangers are just. It's an organizational issue. They need to really reevaluate how they handle player development.
Yeah.
Let's hop into our winners and losers of free agency. I know we just went over the teams who we think have improved the most so far, but winners and losers are a little bit different. It could be a player who secured a bag somehow, Cody Ceci, we're talking to you, or it can be a team that we feel like just overall like went out and just made moves that I guess won them the offseason. I don't know. So give me your guys' winners of the offseason so far, or I guess free agency.
I think you got to go with Vegas, man. I mean, you got the biggest fish out there. You get Mitch Marner for $12 million, which is under what people were projecting. Pair him with Jack Eichel. I think that they needed some scoring in their top six, and that hole is perfectly filled with Mitch Marner. Obviously, it's tough with the Alex Pietrangelo news. I think that that's definitely going to change the projection of the Golden Knights. People really do underestimate how valuable Alex Pietrangelo is to that team. So I'm not projecting Vegas to be my favorites after this move, but when it comes to getting the big player, making the right move for a fair contract, I think that Vegas is hands down the biggest winner in my eyes of free agency.
You know what? And this might be a little bit of like loophole stuff. And it's kind of funny because we're talking about like a little bit of the CBA when it all kind of goes together. Mm-hmm. Close all of them if you didn't know. But is Florida technically a winner?
Yeah.
Because look.
I hate Florida, man. I hate Florida.
Look, let's be honest. The Florida Panthers are You can't get rid of him. And now this is the one thing here. So before I even get into like what they did right, because I think we all know what I'm going to go with there, they're about $2.5 million over the cap. You'd be about 10% if anybody's listening doesn't know that. And they're going to have to get rid of somebody, probably Evan Rodriguez, and give that money back to like Maki Samoskevich. But we'll see how that goes. Anyway, this team was able to keep Sam Bennett, Aaron Ekblad. Somehow Eric Blad took 6.1. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Aaron Ekblad
and Brad Marchand, another crazy contract. But now this team, realistically, could be very competitive for another 3 years. Mm-hmm. How crazy is that when you get Sam Bennett eight years, $8 million. Aaron Ekblad, 8 years, 6.1. I know Steve Yzerman was pissed when he saw that one. And then Brad Marchand. Tough, but Brad Marchand, 5.3 or 5.25, I guess, over 6 years. I cringed at that one, but how do you do it? Who knows? Like,
there's a conspiracy theory going on. Fuck Florida, man. I fucking hate that team. How are you gonna get Brad Marchand to a 6 year deal till he's fucking 43 and we think that that's an okay thing to do?
LTIR. You know what? That brings up another thing. LTIR contracts and like sending people till they're till a freaking moon, till they're like 45 years old. That might be the new loophole when it comes to stuff like this. Because teams, I mean, like, you're gonna investigate it if they think it's a little bit concerning. Who's going to look at Brad Marchand after year four and say, yeah, I mean, he's like 41. That makes sense. Oh, okay. Yeah, there goes 5.3 down the drain. You yeah, let's get someone else in free agency.
Well, what's stupid, though, is Brad Marchand is the type of player that will actually play till he's 43.
I think he will finish
that contract. I don't
think he's going to be worth the 5 point something, but do you think he's still going to be in Florida? Hell no. Somebody else is going to take that contract in 2 years when Florida starts to die down.
We'll send him back home.
Yeah, like he basically agreed to this deal because they were like, dude, we'll sign you for 6 years. That way you're making probably what you would make on the market. Just take a lesser AAV. We'll be all good. You'll win Stanley Cups. Everything's A-OK in fucking Florida, dude. No, it's a joke. It's a joke. And they are the winners. Of course they're the winners, but I'm That's not winner, giving them the satisfaction of saying it myself.
Yeah.
No more Florida.
Yeah, I can't get over that contract that Aaron Ekblad signed. What a bargain.
Yeah, I don't know how they were able to get him to sign that. I mean, obviously, there's a good reason. He's going to keep winning and play along one of the best shutdown defensemen in the league. So it makes sense why he did it.
But yeah, that's why. Yeah, I think Florida obviously was probably the biggest winner of this free agency just for the fact that Bill Zito pulled off what I thought was going to be impossible and keeping the big three there and keeps their cup window open for at least two or three more seasons. Yeah, minimum.
Now, let's hop into some losers. You guys give me your losers of free agency so far.
Jimmy, you take this one.
Why are you smiling, bro? Why are you smiling? All right. Man, the Boston Bruins are easily the biggest losers. The only bigger losers than them is the LA Kings for giving Cody Ceci the contract.
Yeah.
But the second worst isn't something you want to hang your hat on. Don Sweeney had an amazing draft, not because he's good at drafting, but because the top six picks decided to not take James Higgins, and he was gifted a potential top line center if he can somehow figure out how to develop him, because they can't develop any young players. And if you look back, guys like Matthew Patra, who was really excellent in his first season, has now been reduced to third line or AHL minutes. But moving on from the draft, they signed Tanner Jeannot and they trade for Victor Arvidsson. I'm going to break this into two parts. Tanner Jeannot is a fourth-line player, okay? You do not need to pay a fourth-line player $3.4 million for the next 5 years. That's one thing. They trade for Victor Arvidsson. You should be getting draft compensation for taking Victor Arvidsson. You should not be trading anything to get a player like that, and he doesn't fit your needs. I feel like the Boston Bruins have three lines of third- to fourth-line players, and even their top line is – two players who should not be on top line. I like Geeky as much as the next guy. I think the contract was fair based on what he did for last season. You needed to keep a guy around for David Pastrnak. But Elias Lindholm is not a top line center. Morgan Geekie is not a top line winger, and Tanner Jeannot should never be sniffing a 5-year, $3.5 million per season contract. Victor Arvidsson is also not the type of player they need. Combine these two players at 40 points last season. Mikael Granlund had 66. Mikael Granlund's making $7 million. They're making, I think, what, 7.4 or something combined. You messed up big time. You could have gotten someone to help out your team a little bit more now, and you decided to go a different route because you want to get more physical. Yeah, fucking right. Stupid. That's all I got, guys.
That was good. That was good. I was happy.
That's all I got.
You know, I think there's a lot of I don't really want to go with the easy one of LA because, like, I still think they'll do pretty well, and I still think other than the defense, they address some decent needs. But I'm going to go a little bit off the board here and say Seattle. You know, like, I don't know if you need to be paying a guy in Ryan Lindgren $4.5 million over, what was it, $4.5 million? Something like that?
Four by 4.5.
Yeah, over that many years to be, like, your bottom guy defenseman. Now, I like their defense core. I think it's good. But it seems like we're kind of getting to the – it seems like we're kind of getting to the area of another middle six forward to the Seattle Kraken. Like, why not, man? Like, I love some things that they've done and other things it makes me cringe. Like, why are we going to trade for Frederick Goudreau? I don't know. Like, what, like, okay. You know what? I will say this. Andre Burakovsky, getting that contract off your books? Great. Poor Joe Valeno. I feel bad for that guy. Like, you know what? Like, that sucks. Get traded. You think you're going to a new place? No, you're getting bought out. But just, like, Seattle to me, they go into the draft. I was kind of hoping they get a defenseman. They pick Jake O'Brien. Now, I think a lot of people get it mixed up. I like Jake O'Brien. He's a solid player. Is he what they needed? Yet again, we have this another thing of another centerman to Seattle. Same thing. I'm not a big fan of that. I don't think, like, best player available, yes. But go and get someone you need, like a young defenseman. Let Shane Wright play higher in the lineup. No, let's go get another centerman to play over him.
Just, like, trade, like, down. Like, if, like, you don't, you know what I mean? If it's best player available and you don't need that player, trade down. Get more assets. Seattle keeps doing this thing where, like, even remember the Mason Marchment thing? I was like, I love Mason Marchment. He's such a great player for an actual competing team. Not Seattle. When I saw that trade, I was like, what are we doing here? Like, why does that? But yeah, to add to your point, man, you're so right. The drafting for convenience rather than for what you need is the dumbest thing Seattle keeps doing.
Also,
I will say, sorry, Zach. I will say, like, if it's best player available, like, you know what? I'm not going to fault you the whole time for doing that because sometimes the best player available is a freaking stud.
Yeah.
But, like, when you have, let's go through it here. Matty Beniers, Shane Wright, Berkeley Catton, shout out to him. He was a steal last year. And then now we got Jake O'Brien. Notice that all of those players are centermen and have played center their whole life. Oh my God. Like, I don't know. I look at this and I say, like, Seattle is just, and I hate it because I like them. They're just continuing to, like, be mid. And I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But I hope I'm
wrong. I mean, I'm not surprised with Jason Boschwell being the GM. I've had to deal with him for a number of years as a Buffalo Sabres fan. And I'll tell you, I don't think he's a great GM. I can't believe he got a second chance. I don't think he's going to do a good job in Seattle. I already think he's not doing a great job. He doesn't really address needs like you need to. He just kind of keeps stockpiling. He did the same thing with the Sabres. When he was the GM, we had great center depth. And now they're all gone and we have no centers left.
Tell me why they decided to give Ryan Lindgren a 4 by $4.5 million contract. They got a need for an extra $2 million more than what they really should have. Ryan Lindgren probably gets what, $3 million max by any other team. But here comes Jason Botterill in Seattle being like, we'll give you $4.5 million per season to come play third line minutes for us. And you guys brought up the defense is poor for them. They draft center after center. Last offseason, they went out and got a Stevenson on a $7 by $7 million contract. We all thought either him or Beniers were going to be their top line center, but they just kept flipping back and forth all season. They didn't have a clear number one center. And then you also add Shane Wright into the mix. They have three second line centers on their team right now. I don't think Matty Beniers right now is a first line center outside of his his rookie season. He's been mid at best. Chandler Stephenson got a little bit more than what he was worth, but that's what happens when you play in Vegas and leave. Your stats are going to be a little bit inflated, especially when you were a vital part of that cup run that they went on where they killed everybody. And, of course, we all know Berkeley, Caton, or whatever, and then also you go out and get Jake O'Brien in. I had Jake O'Brien going 8th overall in my mock draft, but after that, I was like, they really need defensemen. I'm like an idiot for it, and they went out and they got Jake O'Brien instead, and you had a 6'6", ginormous defenseman in Radim Mirka. You could have, even if you wanted to, traded back, like you guys said, gotten either a Jaxon Smith or Kashawn Aitchison, because they would have been there even if you guys traded to the 12th overall pick with Pittsburgh and figured something out there. But nope, we go center here, and now you currently have five centers that all have NHL potential, and they're, none of them are going to be good enough. Sorry, none of them are going to be bad enough to play fourth line minutes. So then you're going to be forced to hand to either force them over to the wing and play them somewhere where they're very uncomfortable, or you're going to be forced to trade them because you don't have room for them on your team. And then now you're going to be stuck with the same spot you were in the first place with a very weak blue line, 2 to 3 really good centers, and a bunch of second and third line wingers. And that's that. So I totally get where you guys are coming with Seattle. Jason Botterill, not the great GM to bring this team from being an 80-point team to a playoff team. If anything, they're going to be a 75-point team this season. I don't mean to be harsh with it, but you have Vince Dunn, who is great. I love him on the blue line. Great offensive and puck-moving defenseman. Brandon Montour, contract well-deserved. He's solid for them. But then after that, it just falls off a cliff. Riker Evans isn't bad. But then when you have Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak playing top 4 minutes for you, you have a problem. And then, of course, like I touched on, the Ryan Lindgren contract, not great. And then on top of it, your goaltending with Joey Decord, who I'm a fan of, don't mind him. And then Philip Grubauer being your backup, like, it's just not good. It's a bunch of mid, like Zach said. And overall, I don't expect nothing more and nothing less from a Seattle team that outside of their second season has just been nothing but a bunch of meh thrown together.
Let's be honest. I really try to think about this question. Is Seattle really a destination for players right now? Because they don't have stars, right?
No.
Like, I've never seen a big free agent. Seattle's in the mix. Like, Mitch Marner's available. Seattle's ready to throw a bag at him. Like, what is wrong with Seattle for people to not want to play there? Is it still, like, we saw Vegas be so good so quickly that people were like, this is attractive, no state tax, and now we got Seattle where it's just, like, there's no star players there, and we're expecting Matty Beniers to just, like, carry a line. Like, he's not playing with anybody. I don't expect anything from Matty Beniers. Like, you take Matty Beniers out of Seattle, I think he's going to thrive somewhere else. So it's not – it's just more of, like, an organizational culture thing in my eyes. Like, do players want to play there? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's more of a thing is, like, they don't really have a plan, and I think players sense that. And, you know, with a team like Vegas, like you mentioned, like, the destination, because the organization is very clear and upfront that they want to win, and they're willing to win no matter what. And then you got a team like Seattle where they just keep drafting centers. They don't address needs like they should. And then as a free agent, you look at them, it's like, well, they're not serious about winning. Why would I go there?
Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, W always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, W will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to W.GG and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. I know. That, Jimmy, we touched on the Bruins a little bit, so if you want to go more in depth with them as we're getting into this, by all means, go for it. But Zach, I'm going to start with you. Touch on your Maple Leafs a little bit. How do you feel about the whole Mitch Marner situation? How do you feel about them bringing in some other assets, that type of stuff? And by all means, floor is yours. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, this situation with Mitch Marner, it's been going on for a while, you know, and that's not even just me saying that, it's really just been with, like, the fans. Like, you know, a lot of people have been hard on him throughout his year in Toronto and years in Toronto, and it just hasn't been great that way. And you know, you heard him say it. Like, he was willing to write out this contract. He did. The Leafs were able to get something in return for him, and Nicholas Waugh, who is a very suitable third line guy, and I think he'll do well in Toronto, especially on two years left into next year. So I like what they did there. You know, I think that Treliving is being very smart here in free agency and before his extensions and contracts that he gave out. I mean, you get John Tavares 4 years, 4.38 is very good. You keep Matthew Nyes under 8 million, 6 years, 7.75. And then a guy in Steven Lorenz, which I projected at 1.3 over 3 years, he gets 1.35. Completely okay with that for how he was utilized and how he did. Now, the Leafs, and you know, Treliving said this, the Leafs still want to get a top six guy, whether that means a center, so you move Tavares presumably over the wing, or you get a winger to go over there. I don't know if that means you go over to Kyle Dubas, your old GM, and say, do you want me to give you Rust and Raquel, and I give you something else? I don't know. That's the idea. You know, the Leafs want, and he even said this, they're not going to have the same lineup when they go into there. So does that mean Nick Robertson gets traded because he still hasn't been given a contract? Is there guys in the bottom six that get moved? A lot of people say a guy in Kelly Yarncroc, David Kampf, who play similar roles defensively. But those are the names you just hear, right? I think the Leafs have done a great job with their defense. They haven't really had to touch it, and I think that's what's great. Brandon Carlo's name's out there as well. I don't really think you should move him. I think he's done a pretty solid job playing with Riley. And then there's the goaltending. No problem with that. So altogether, I didn't touch on Michelli. I think Michelli's a pretty good playmaker. But at the end of the day, I think the Leafs have done a suitable job for the position that they've been put in. And I think that altogether, you do need to add in the top six. And I think, you know, he hit that on their head. It's true. But I like it. You know, it feels different. And it sucks to see Marner go. You know, I watched this guy get drafted. Been a Leafs fan my whole life. It stinks. And I'm happy for him in Vegas. I think I like that. I think he's going to do well. But I like what they've done to kind of change things up. Not to say they don't need to add, but I don't mind it. Truly.
Yeah. Jimmy, do you have anything else to add on the Bruins here before we move on?
Nothing really to add on the Bruins. I do want to say nothing makes me happier than seeing Toronto lose players and get worse, but I do think that you're right in the sense that like there was clearly some kind of rift between the two enough that it wasn't going to keep going. And I think that Toronto is going to be better off without Mitch Marner in the end, because I think that there was something internally between those four players that was inevitably not going to allow them to win. And I think that this now kind of takes the scapegoat away from Toronto. I feel like every fan is so quick to say Marner this, Marner that, that now we're going to see a little bit more pressure on guys like Nylander and Matthews, who can now actually see if they can show up and not rely on a guy like Marner to take all of the heat from the fan base and the media. So I'm excited to see this next chapter for the Leafs. Like I said, I'm not their biggest fan, but it's always cool to see when original six markets are competitive. So hopefully they can figure this out.
Maybe this is the change that the Leafs needed. And there was a little bit of talk even after the Bruins series going into the 24-25 season that maybe change was needed. And they were kind of forced their hand at this point with Marner just walking. And they were lucky to be able to get Nicholas Waugh out of it. And I think he's a solid third line guy for the Leafs. I really do. And bringing in a couple guys that, oh, by the way, I want to mention this as well. The Matthew Nyes contract, too, I think is an absolute steal. That's a bargain. I absolutely love it. And bringing in Maselli, I think you bring in Maselli and Waugh, and they've combined for 100 points last season. Right there, you're replacing Mitch Marner and not losing anything too crazy outside of Mitch Marner. You bring the 100 points in, I think everything is fine. So I like their blue line. I think their goaltending is great. Up front, I think, again, now there's still a lot of pressure on Matthews. Tavares' contract, by the way, absolute steal at $4 million. Don't know how Toronto got away with that. And overall, I think that it's time for the Leafs to lock in. Understand that now there's no more core four. It's a core three, I guess you could really call it. And time to win some playoff games. Get to the conference finals at minimum. I think that's expectations every year at this point. And hopefully a healthy healthy season from Austin Matthews and get to that 50-60 goal mark for them.
I mean, my biggest question, though, just with the Maple Leafs is, though, can they beat the Florida Panthers in the playoffs? I think that's going to be the question they're going to have to answer all year long. And I don't know if anyone in the East, in their defense, I don't know if anyone in the East can beat Florida this season. I think because if Toronto wants to get to the conference final, they got to get through Florida. Unless one of them is somehow a wild card team, which I don't see happening with the way the Atlantic division is. I do think Florida and Toronto are the two best teams in that division still. I think they're going to be matched up in the first
Tampa, round. Tampa.
I think Toronto's still better than Tampa.
No. Tampa had a bad showing, but Tampa is still a better team, man. The Tampa recency stuff is crazy to me because, yeah, they had a bad series against Florida, but even the players on Florida were like, that was the toughest team to face. They just couldn't get their scoring going for some reason in the playoffs. Yeah. And to me, it's not, I'm trying not to be a Leafs hater because I actually really like what the Leafs have done. I love their revamped defense. And I think Brandon Carlo was the exact guy they needed, but I still think that Florida and the style that they play, it's not a good match for Toronto. And I don't think that they got to seven games because Toronto played well. I just think that Florida didn't play their best hockey in that series. I think it speaks more to Florida than it does Toronto in that series. If they face against the Lightning, I think that will continue to be their toughest task. Not to discredit anything from the Leafs, of course, but like it is still their toughest team. That Lightning team is loaded. Maybe they're just a piece or two away from being able to compete with a Florida team. But Florida's like next level, guys. Like it's just not fair. They're on a whole other tier. So if it wasn't Florida, then it was going to be the Lightning this year. Let's be honest.
Yeah, this is the thing is I don't think Toronto has the pieces to get out of the second round. So
I don't know. I don't know. Like I was riding the Tampa wave late in the season where they were getting hot. I thought maybe they were the best team in the East. Florida shut me the hell up right away. But then I really thought that if Toronto got past Florida, they were going to the finals. I thought that was happening. And
let me put it on. I'm standing on business right now. Toronto wins game 7 against the Florida Panthers. They're in the cup final.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. Like, I'm sorry.
No, that's not guaranteed.
It is guaranteed. Because The Leafs, put it this way. The Panthers and the Hurricanes played a very similar game. Like just throughout the season in general.
Yeah.
The Panthers obviously did it better. We saw that in the playoffs and just all together. But they do. You're telling me the Leafs, with that gained confidence, and Stolar's back. I think both of them are fine. Let's just say Stolar comes back, plays the same. You're telling me they don't walk into Carolina and say, how do you do? Because 4-0 against the Panthers, they played well. But you're telling me the Leafs don't like say, oh, yeah, 6-7 games? I think so.
I get your point, but like, why are you assuming that they're coming out with confidence and not shitting bricks? This is a team that comes up short every time. The problem I have with Toronto is everybody always assumes if we get over that little hump, then we're cup champions. We're this. We're getting to the final sort of thing. It's not even like discourse on Toronto. I've experienced every time on the right side of history with the Bruins how bad the Toronto Maple Leafs can be in a tough spot, and they showed it again in this game 7. So we're talking hypotheticals. If Toronto beat in game 7, what's to tell me that they weren't going to go and lay a goose egg against Carolina? I think the Panthers just have Carolina's number, and I think Paul Maurice is Rod's dad at this point because the way they always handle them. But it's not to say that Toronto is a bad team by any means. I don't think that mix of players was the right mix. I would feel a million times more confident if the Leafs went out and got another top line player with a little bit more grit. Let's hypothetically say they landed Brad Marchand. If you told me they ran it back with the Florida Panthers, I would feel way more confident without Mitch Marner than I would have with Mitch Marner. It's just a mixed thing. I think Berube is the right guy for them. I think their defense is on track. I think their goaltending is great. I just think there's a little bit of a thing within their forward core that needed to change. One was the ego of Tavares, which I believe is firmly gone. He's now on less of a contract. He's going to play better because there's way less expectations for him to produce. Mitch Marner's gone. You get another guy like Marcelli who's looking to improve himself with the Leafs. I think they're in a way better position now. But let's not just assume they're going to get to the cup finals if they beat Florida. Because Carolina was a good team. And I think people really do, again, they underestimate Carolina because of how good Florida was. I think it's way more of a conversation about them being levels above than Carolina being a bad team.
Well, what I will say is, you know, we talk about the Leafs coming up short. What about the Hurricanes?
Mm-hmm.
They get to the spot. They get to the spot every time. and nothing happens. So what's to say that, for example, when for using these two sides, one force that does it, that can't do it. No, this isn't even me making a joke, because if we're going off the Leafs, you know, how they can't seem to get over this one bump, and the Hurricanes can't seem to get over this one bump, usually the Eastern Conference Final, which, I mean, it's not really terrible, but still. Meet. What's going to happen? You don't really know, right? It's not like Florida's on the other side. It's not like, I don't know, who's like really good back in the day? I guess the 2018 Capitals or something. Like, you know, like it's not like this one thing. So yeah. Who's to say that it could have been different? Again, hypotheticals.
Yeah. Me.
But, yeah. You know, it's an interesting conversation to have if something different had happened. I don't think it's so awful to say that, yeah, Toronto might have been shitting bricks. Who knows, man? But then again, who's to say the Hurricanes aren't shitting bricks on that bench, because they just can't do it either.
It's definitely a battle of the chokers. I'll give you that. I'm not confident in the Hurricanes to be any better than the Leafs, but I just think it's a discourse that keeps happening whenever I talk about the Maple Leafs, where everybody's like, they were one game away, and I'm like, you're always one game away. You're one David Pastrnak bounce off the boards away from winning. You're one 4-goal deficit away from winning. It happens all the time, and to me, it's not about the Leafs. Again, I think that they're a good team. I've been more of a supporter of the Leafs lately than I have been in the past, just because I finally think that they understand what's been wrong, and this Mitch Marner thing feels like they really kind of understand what they needed to do at this point. And I'm not sure what the future is going to hold for them, what it's going to look like without Marner, but I will agree that I do think they could have put up a much better chance of getting to the Cup Finals had they beat the Panthers, but I'm not going to admit that they'll get there. I just don't think that they
will. With all that being said, go Leafs go. Thanks, everyone.
Last thing I want to get into here before we end things off. We already talked about a lot of overpaid contracts, a lot of negative. Let's get into some positive stuff. Here are some deals that we think are bargains. I have a couple off the top of my head, but I want to hear what you guys have to say first.
Preston, you go ahead first. Me and Jimmy have been like...
stole your thunder every time. You're good.
I mean, we already touched on this a little bit. I think the Vladislav Gerekov contract's an absolute bargain bin contract for the Rangers. I think a lot of these contracts are honestly going to age pretty well with the way the cap's going to be going up in the next few years. I think we got to get used to guys getting paid more money. Like, fourth-line guys are going to start getting $2 or $3 million a year. It's just how it's going to be now. But $7 million a year for a guy you can plug in on the top pair with Adam Fox. He's a pure defensive guy. I think he's going to really help the Rangers a lot. And that $7 million cap hit in like 5 years, it's going to be nothing.
Yeah, I also think you got to just throw Aaron Ekblad in there again.
That's an obvious
Aaron
one
Ekblad
too.
Is easy.
Let's get back on the Panthers, everyone.
Yeah, we're back talking about the Panthers. Sam Bennett one. I don't think
he'll age great because he's a power. Just has how physical he is, but like he could have got way more money on the
overvaluing of Sam Bennett. I know he's great in the playoffs, but people go crazy for this contract. Like, I think he's an $8 million player. I think that's like a very fair contract for him.
This is my thing with this contract is that the Panthers aren't paying him for what he does in a regular season. I think his career has 50 points. They're paying him for the 15 goals that he just put up and won the Conn Smythe. And the thing is, he was never leaving Florida. He was always the number one priority, him, Ekblad, and Marchand. But if a team like Anaheim went out and gave Bennett an 8x8 contract, you're like, what are you doing? Like, it's one of those things. But if a playoff team was like, hey, we'll take Bennett off of your hands, you somehow can't afford him, you can't get a deal done. Let's say, hypothetically, we're back with them again. He hits the open market, and a team like, let's say, Toronto, for example, was like, here's an 8x8. That you're looking at, it's like, okay, I understand it. So I think that the Panthers are paying him for what he's going to do for them to bring more championships and possibly start a dynasty here. But,
well, yeah. I think if he would have hit the open market, I think he could have got more money. I think 10 plus easily. I think
which is stupid.
It is dumb. That would have been an overpay.
But that it's what you talk about with the cap, man, with things going up. And again, not to talk about the Leafs, but the Leafs would have been a team that would have been like, this is the guy that can help us, and pay him too much because it's going to Canada. You pay more money. But those are the kind of teams. But there are a couple other contracts that I thought were kind of interesting in the middle. The Ivan Provorov one to Columbus was interesting. Ooh. I felt like that was a slight overpay for him. Evan Bouchard's contract was kind of a
a bit of a high AAV for me. I mean, I know people are a little bit controversial on that one, but he overrated. Was one of them. Yeah, and there was also Thatcher Demko's, which I thought was
I don't like that contract.
I don't like that contract, honestly. I think the Canucks did a pretty good job with keeping the term low, because I think he's a top 10 goalie when he's healthy, but the health is the question. So if Demko's healthy and at his best, that's when the Canucks are thriving. So I think if this is kind of like his mini short deal where it's like you make a high AAV now, stay healthy, that could work. But the Bouchard one was the one where I was like, eh, man, you're kind of building your own core for an Edmonton, aren't you now? That's not exactly Carmen great David, in my eyes.
Ear to ear with that one. I have a couple here. I'm going to involve some other teams that we maybe didn't talk about too much. Maybe a little rapid fire. Pontus Holmberg, 2 years, 1.55. I think that if he plays the same type of game that he did in Toronto, like just very simple stuff, that's a good contract. Lars Eller, fourth line center, 1 year, 1.25. Very solid. I think that if you're going to add anybody in free agency, if you're the Sens, you needed to address that spot. He has experience. He can score a bit. And he just does his job well. And you don't have to hear about it, which is great. Because if you're not hearing about him, there's not really a problem, which is good. And then I like the Brandon Tanev deal. I think that they're looking to add size, 3 years, $2.5 million. He's going to play in your bottom six. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you add JJ Paterka. Yeah, he can score, but he doesn't do anything else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, here you go. Like, here's Brandon Tanev. Here's other guys that we can bring into this lineup. You know, Jimmy, you brought it up. Preston, you also talked about it, that Utah is a team that won. I like what they did. And I think that's not a bad contract either. Parker Kelly, 4 years, 1.7. People might hate on that. He's fine in the bottom six. He played that third line center job almost through the whole year like an absolute boss until they brought in like Charlie Coyle at 5.25. But he did that very well, very suitably, and didn't have many mistakes when it came to something like this. And then, yeah, I kind of want to touch on the Demko thing here. I made a video on that. I thought he was going to get traded. You can't have, I think it's 5.5 and then 8.5 for two goalies, and then Shelov's is waiver eligible. Something's going to have to happen there. I don't know what it will look like, but if you're the Canucks, it's kind of like, okay, well, Demko, if he gets hurt again, then we have to go Lankinen. Lankinen's making 5.5. But then you have Shelov's, who's waiver eligible, and he's good, and he just won a Calder Cup. Or is it Calder Cup? Or Calder Cup.
Yeah.
And then he just won the MVP in the playoffs. So what are we going to do with him? Like, you have so many balls to juggle here. What you got to make a choice here. You can't go and sign Demko $8.5 million over 3 years. Like, someone's got to go, unless you're going to somehow keep him and go with it, run three goalies, or say, I hope someone doesn't take him in waivers. Vancouver is very interesting to me. That's a team I'll look at. But yeah, I think a lot of those contracts are interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what
Demko's is tradable though. No, right? I mean, if Demko is healthy this year and like say that, like it's not the worst. Like that's why it's not the worst. Like
no, I mean like trade $8.5 million out. Like
there's some desperate teams, man. There's some desperate teams. Like, if he's healthy and Vancouver's, this is the best case scenario for this contract. If you're Vancouver. Demko's healthy and you play great. Obviously, that's number one. Yep. Number two, you're dog shit, but Demko plays great and he puts up good numbers. Then his trade value is high because he's healthy, he's playing. And then you can convince a dumb team like Edmonton that needs a goalie to say, hey, this is our guy. We're going to take Thatcher Demko. Not necessarily Edmonton because they're actually good and they're not going to go pay a guy 8.5 because they don't have the space. But there are teams out there that would be like, we are a goalie away. And if Thatcher Demko is available and healthy, it's not a lot of term. And I think that that's kind of why I said it's a sweet spot. But the AAV is definitely high. It is a guy, though, that was, 1 year removed from being a Vezina finalist, though. Mm-hmm. So when he's healthy, he's obviously a legit top 10 guy. So it's an interesting contract is the way I like to put Thatcher Demko's.
Well, once his contract goes on the books, there's only going to be three active goalies that are going to be making more money than him. And those are all Vezina Trophy winners, like Vasilevsky, Bobrovsky, and Igor Shesterkin. So they better hope he bounces back. Or if he's hurt again this year, he's doesn't look the same, you can't move the contract and you're stuck with him, and then you kind of have a really bad goalie situation.
This is my thing with this contract. I don't like the contract initially, paying $8.5 million for a goaltender that seems just can't stay healthy the last 12 to 16 months. But with the cap rising pretty much exponentially over the next 2 to 3 seasons plus, the term I'm okay with. 3 years for a 29-year-old goaltender.
Oh, the term is great. Yeah.
That's fine. But he doesn't have any clauses at all in any of the 3 years that he has. So I think Vancouver, like you guys mentioned, banking on him performing well, seeing either A, having Shelovs develop more in the AHL for another year or two, still dominate, it doesn't hurt. Have him come up with whoever, Lankin or whoever the backup goalie is at the time. Trade Demko to a team that is desperate for a goaltender. Let's say Edmonton, if they're still a contender, they still somehow don't have a goaltender in a year and a half, 2 years. Get back whatever you can for Demko. And if you have to 50% retain or retain any salary, so be it, whatever you're getting, at least 4.5 off the books minimum. Or if you're lucky enough, you can get 6 off the books, 6.5 off the books. Now you're paying Demko $2-2.5 million for a season and a half, or even just a few months if they trade him the last year of his deal. Like, I think the contract right now doesn't look great. And when I first saw it, I was like, what are you doing? But thinking about it a little bit more, it does feel like the Canucks are banking on him to perform better and then ship him off when he's 31, 32 years old and be a rental for a possible Stanley Cup contender. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. The downfall of the Canucks needs to be studied, though, because this team's implosion has been just as disastrous as, like, the Bruins side when we're talking about culture and inside of a locker room, just, like, eating a team from the inside out. The Canucks are basically just in how can we not let Quinn Hughes walk? That's kind of what they're doing right now. And I think this is their kind of thing to be like, hey, we got to build up Demko somehow, either to trade him for something. We can't let this guy just go. And I think that's what you're seeing as a desperate team right now, trying whatever they can to make this team as good as possible for the next 2 years to keep, like, Quinn Hughes sticking around.
Well, the thing that gets me too, though, just one last thing on Vancouver is, like you mentioned, the locker room issues they've had the last couple of years, having to ship out JT Miller, really unfortunate situation. And then you bring in a guy like Evander Kane, who's kind of known to have some issues.
I don't understand that.
This is another situation like when the Bruins traded for Victor Arvidsson. The Oilers should have been giving up assets for someone to take the contract. Instead, you get a draft pick for someone taking all of Evander Kane's contract. Like, the Oilers got to be thrilled about that.
Yeah,
but I don't know how this helps the Canucks. Like, I don't know. This team must think they're a lot better than they are, but I don't know what they're doing.
They're lying to themselves. That's why
they are. They are lying to themselves.
I'll point one thing out here. Just because I messed up, it's actually 4.5 for Lankin. And second thing, Demko's extension doesn't actually kick in. I feel like we all know this, doesn't kick in until 2026, 27.
Mm-hmm.
When that kicks in, there is a no movement clause full.
Okay.
All the way through. Lankin has a full no movement clause until the end of the 2026, 27. And then it's modified no trade. So, right now, as it stands, in 2026-27, you will have $13 million wrapped up in two goalies. So, Jimmy, you're not wrong. A team might trade for him at $5 million, but then you got to take 8.5. So,
but, like, which teams are we talking, right? Like, this is where it becomes interesting. Well,
let's throw Carolina in there. They seem to like goaltenders.
Yeah,
that's a team that I'm like, okay.
That would make sense.
If they like unhealthy goaltenders, they'd love to bring another guy in the room. But, like, that's a team where I'm like, hey, man, Freddie's kind of unreliable sometimes. And he's good at some points. But if Thatcher's healthy, man. If he's healthy, that's a team that might just push you right over the edge, like make a little bit of a difference. And are you really going to be hurting that bad if he comes in and it's a 3-year contract? It's not the end of the world. Like,
no.
The upside of it to me is really, really high, but the risk is it's definitely there. So it's an interesting contract through and through, because that no move clause, it's not something I expected him to get on that deal either. So
I'll say it right now, the Vancouver Canucks better be praying that Jonathan Lekkerimäki is just gonna absolutely shoot up this year, because if he's not, then you got all these contracts. I'm looking at it right now, like, Quinn Hughes better be saying bye bye, because
I'm in Jersey, dude.
Okay, to be fair, I actually forgot this, he's actually signed till 2026-27, not that bad, but It's tough, man. You're right, Jimmy. That downfall needs to be studied. That's just tough.
The implosion, man. I'm telling you, there's a few teams around the league.
Edmonton in 2024. Keep that in mind.
And three teams to keep an eye on this year: Boston, Rangers, Canucks. Those are the three teams that went from like first to worst in a year. And this season is going to be really telling about their futures going forward.
Boston, let's go, man. I'm just kidding. But
go Boston.
Are we gonna have the Bruins finally be worse than the Sabres for once? That's
hell no.
No one's worse than the Sabres
last year.
Hey, that's because we tanked at the end. All right, let's be honest. Yeah, we sold off all our assets. Okay,
the Sabres don't even have to try to tank. That's how bad we are.
I actually think the Bruins will be worse than the Sabres this year, especially after the recent signings. But it's not like Buffalo's doing much, man, to make them a better team. So
don't even get me started.
I will say, I can't remember when I made this or when I did this take or made this video, I did say if there was a year the Sabres would make the playoffs, it would be 2026. I don't know. I'm just saying.
It's not.
I'm just saying.
Man.
Okay.
When it comes to the Bruins, man, it's either going to be a really positive year for them or a complete disaster.
You got a lot
of Flyer players, right? Like, is Elias Lindholm coming off his like back injury from what reports? Is he going to be able to kind of step up into that role? Are we going to see Geeky kind of produce the same way? Zaka step up a little bit? It's all going to be dependent on whether or not these young players can slot in. But I am booking this as a Gavin McKenna year for sure for the Bruins.
I don't think they're going to be that bad to be a top five lottery team.
Oh, imagine we get McKenna, man, and he's just haunting you for years.
Honestly, it wouldn't shock me. Boston seems to get everything.
What do you mean, everything? Hold on.
I'm like, oh, you guys are so tired of winning.
Hey, listen, have you seen this offseason for Boston teams, man? The Celtics are blown up. Oh, come on, man. I got the Red Sox sucking. I got the Bruins sucking.
Freaking city of winners, city of losers.
Yeah. Cry me a river.
Okay. What I will add to the Bruins before I just get off this topic. If there's a guy I'm rooting for, it's Fraser Minton. I think he can be a very good middle six center. I hope that Matthew Patra gets time in Boston. I really hope he gets time over a guy in Victor Arvidsson personally. But and then a guy in Mason Lorai. I'll add, there's one more I have here. I feel like everyone knows where I'm gonna go with it. But Mason Lorai, he signs 2 years, $3 million?
Yeah,
3.2, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's so skilled. Like, I think that his skating is good. I think that he's able to make plays and solid passes. Just sometimes the plays he makes is questionable, but I think that's with time that will come. And then there's one more guy. And I'll be extremely, extremely interested to see how this one goes. It's Jeremy Swayman.
Yeah.
He signs his contract last year. You know, he misses his preseason. Like if there's something where it's like, oh yeah, this is breaking the camel's back right here, it's Jeremy Swayman. Like if he doesn't have another good year, that extension's kicking in, or it's already kicked in. But how is that going to look for the Bruins? Like, if it's like continuous, like, I mean, like this year is the same as this past, and let's say the Bruins kind of improve, but he's still kind of like, like, are you looking at that and saying, oh God, like, am I going to give him a couple more years, or am I saying I'm jumping ship on this thing? Like, Edmonton, what are you going to pay me? Even though I don't think they'd take that because of the money wise, it'd be hard work. But that's like the one question I have for the Bruins is that. Yeah. There's a lot of other ones, but Jeremy Swayman needs a bounce back year.
But I don't think the Bruins' problem this year is going to be their defense or their goaltending. I think they're going to be the Islanders this year. If you watch their games, it's going to be a lot of play behind. They got the AHL coach from LA. I can't remember his name for some reason, but he's been talking about the system he's looking to run. We're going to see a very defensive-minded Bruins team this year that a lot of people seem to forget was injured for most of the season last year. Yeah. We didn't have McAvoy or Lindholm, which are the top two guys. I think you're so right about Lorai, the skills there, but last year he wasn't put in a position to succeed. He's not ready for top pairing minutes, and I think he'll grow with time, especially if he gets to play those top minutes with a guy like McAvoy. I think he's going to be in a lot better position than playing with Nikita Zadorov, who's just an absolute cone out there. But there's a difference between that and McAvoy, right? So I think that the Bruins have some upside. I think Swayman is going to have a solid year. He might not have the wins, but I think his numbers are going to be much more representable of the guy we saw a couple seasons ago versus the catastrophe that we saw last year.
Like, give me, if they're bad, give me like a 905 or like a 907, something like that. And you're also, I think you're talking about Marco Sturm.
Marco Sturm, that's the name. Yes, so, thank you. Yeah, and he's been known for his defensive system. He's a big fan of like Claude Julien and Suter, I believe, is the guy. I've heard him talk about in some interviews how he models the systems after those. I think that that's important for a team like Boston who really lacks scoring. You need to play defense first. And if you look at their players on their blue line, I think they re-signed Joki Haru too. I think they got some nice depth players. We're talking about a pretty solid defensive core. And Jeremy Swayman and even Jonas Korpisalo, they are good goalies. They were on a bad team last year. There's a saying, you don't judge a defenseman on a bad hockey team. You don't judge a goalie on a bad hockey team. Let's see how they kind of bounce back. And if the Bruins can figure out some form of scoring, which doesn't seem likely, but I expect them to at least put up good defensive numbers because that's usually what they do.
That's going to end it for today's episode. Again, guys, thank you guys for joining Zach and Jimmy. All of their stuff is going to be down in the description. Go follow them. Go check all their stuff out. Amazing content throughout the summer and all year round. And again, subscribe, notification bell for more episodes all off season long. And we'll see you guys in our next episode.